Yes, Tessa. It is the Halloween show, part two. It's nothing to do with Kira sort of getting in touch with her inner vampire. It's just the way things actually are. We're going to have lots of little activities going on here. Not that there's anything particularly scary with church bells, but it's the way that it kind of suddenly manifests itself on this, the eve, almost, of Halloween, really. The eve of the eve, in many ways.
Basically, that is a happy church bell that you've been ringing at the moment. Yeah. There are some very gloomy ones.
Yeah, the gong.
Well, I mean, we'll always get there. I mean, we'll start off this thing in the way we mean to go on, actually, by saying which monster is best at mathematics, Tessa? Clearly,
which
monster is best at mathematics? Count Dracula!
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Every few years they come out, they emerge, they do their whole thing. How are you, Kira Allsbrook?
I am very well, thank you. Very freezing and very cold, but I'm ready for Halloween. Yeah. All my decorations are up at home.
Exactly. So all sort of through there. And indeed, treats in the studio there. Avail yourself of the chocolate treats that are actually there, because it's what we do. It's a matter of course. Sadly, Tessa, in your case, it's a virtual chocolate treat. So it goes. Anyway, motoring on from that point of view, as we like to do, this is the first in the opportunity for you to step into that wonderful thing normally held by Anna Lewis. And before that, of course, Cameron Tilbury, Camo himself, actually used to launch the show with this particular thing. But Tessa's Tune of the Week has an earlier start this week with another amazing line. So would you like to express and explain to the listener and the terrific trio in the studio what we're about to listen to?
Yes, I've got some shoes to fill, though, haven't I, with Anna Lewis and Cameron Tilby. But this week we've got a brand new track from Charles Easton. I don't know whether you've heard of him, but he's best known for his role as Deacon Claiborne in Nashville, the hit TV series. But he actually made his debut here in the UK playing Buddy Holly on London's West End, which I actually just recently found out. But this track is called A Road and a Radio, and it's been described as a rocking country ode to the open road and the music that has long been its soundtrack. And Charles actually, leading up to the release, he performed it earlier this month at the Grand Ole Opry with the same group of Nashville musicians who he recorded it with in the studio. So it's a really nice track. Again, it's one for, I think, for a road trip. But Charles Easton, he's a really good musician. So, yeah, really, really good. I don't know whether we want to listen to it now or...
Baby, we've been working, doing that 9 to 5. What's the use of making a living if we don't feel alive? I saw a beat up ragtop in a lot on the side of town. Maybe we should trade my truck, get a song turned up, get the ragtop down. Don't overthink it. Honey, you can take the wheel. Ain't about a destination. It's about the way we feel. Don't overthink it. Girl, let's just go. Honey, all we need is you and me and the road and the radio. Into that great wide open. Onto that thunder road. On a dark desert highway.
too. Yeah, we think we will actually have a listen to it after all. So, a quick question for the team in the studio. Phil, what did you make of a road and a radio? Silence.
Silence. Actually, yes. Okay. I enjoyed.
Okay. He's teasing, clearly, which is all good. Well, you know, it's the way things actually go. What about yourself, Fergus?
Yeah, I thought it was a very good song. Good driving song, although I don't often know what the meaning of that is, but yeah, it was a good driving song.
Get out.
Oh. Get out. Oh, my goodness.
Well, it happened, you know. Just in case you're wondering. onto the road and the radio. All right, we will. Okay, gosh, sorry, it'll happen throughout. Kira, that wasn't personal.
No, I will just go now, it's fine. No, I liked it. I think it was a lot better than the other song that we had. I can't remember what it was, but it was last week.
Kira was not a fan of last week's test, so don't go
Kira
there.
No, the songs are usually quite good.
Yeah, last week.
This one is good. Okay. Do you like it?
and yet, flip side, it actually managed to tip you into the most valuable contributor line and award from Robin Pierce, because he loved Ukrainian Cowboy. I mean, it's great.
Yes,
you know,
he did. Yeah, it was different, wasn't it? It's not everybody's taste, but it was different.
It was indeed certainly different. Right, movie.
Now.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes you just don't know where we're going with this. Who would you like to have a brief chat with? Would that be Phil Hamlin Williams about exciting things that are happening at the Drill Hall? Would it be Fergus Jeffs about the joys of Leicester and so on, what it's like being a postgraduate? Or would it be Kira and life and times? Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think on this occasion I've got to go with Phil and what's going on at the Drill Hall, because obviously it's an exciting time of year. Halloween, you know, and then firework night, and then Christmas. So I'm sure there's a lot going on there.
And in the music department, which clearly we're in, I think we've got some quite nice stuff coming up.
Okay.
Not necessarily your cup of tea, but who knows? Lots of cups of tea. So on Friday, the RAF Swing Wing. So people who
brilliant.
Like swing, and of course that digs deep into the lovely county of Lincolnshire. Then on Sunday we have Leslie Garrett in conversation with, I think, a rather remarkable person, Anna Tilbrook.
Oh.
Anna Tilbrook is her accompanist, but Anna is also a cricket lover and a member of the MCC.
There you have it.
So that is definitely an evening for me.
In about 48 hours from now, I will be in conversation with Sophie Aldred, formerly Sylvester McCoy's partner in Doctor Who. It's amazing.
It is.
It's great Yarmouth, what the heck. Excellent. Is that it for the moment?
A bit more music.
Yep.
We have our monthly lunchtime concert from the International Chamber Music Festival.
Wow.
That's on Tuesday, and we have Rebecca Smith on viola and violin. Really good quality chamber music. It's lovely to have that sort of stuff. Really is.
You've got a great mix there, then. Really,
I think
really
so.
Good, yeah.
It
really
is
good mix.
Always tremendous, and we'll find out more about those details further on. Web address, Phil, how can people get hold of the Lincoln Drill Hall online?
So it is lincolndrillhall.com.
More from Phil in a few moments, but Kira, would you like to put those last two questions to Tessa, please, assuming we don't actually have sort of standard words of advice?
Okay. That's just rude. I think that's too rude.
I've got to go now.
Kara Guerin, ask those two questions.
I'm really sorry about that, Tessa and Alex's... have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I certainly have. It's been very spooky.
Yeah, it is.
Of the word. A little bit terrifying. I'm glad I'm not speaking with you for the whole show. I think I'd be...
Going to get more challenging. It's going to get more challenging. Exactly.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I hope so. Next week with another track of the week.
Exactly. Outstanding. Meanwhile, back in the capital...
with our werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand. Walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fook's. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Kitchen door. You better not let him in. Little old lady got mutilated late last night. Werewolves of London again. Gent who ran amok in Kent. Lately he's been overheard in Mayfair. You better stay away from him. He'll rip your lungs out, Jim. I'd like to meet his tailor. With the queen doing the werewolves of London. I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the queen doing the werewolves of London. I saw a werewolf drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's. His hair was perfect.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Do you have werewolves in Edinburgh, Phil? William, or is that just a case of it's just a hallucination of mine?
Not in Edinburgh, but there is this lunatic Englishman up north of here who's trying to reintroduce wolves to Scotland, and. Yeah. The locals, I'm sure, are loving it.
Well, that's where it all starts, of course. You innocently introduce a few feral species back to the whole environment, and before you know where you have it, you've got carnage in the streets and a whole range of activities just go on. I mean, it's just too much, really, in so many ways, you know. Sort of setting ourselves up, and then, you know, you walk down Prince's Street, and then, you know, it just all begins to happen. Anyway, we'll let those things settle. Whilst I actually just mention, William, we've got three fabulous folk in the studio. Why three as opposed to the four or five, or six indeed, we would originally planned out, etc.? Well, Fergus actually wasn't even on the list until he actually emailed me and said, am I on? And I said, all right, Fergus, we'll fit you in. Little did I realise that Eva MacDonald would actually be out on a location recce to the possible one of her camps she may be taking part in and entertaining people next year. This is before we head off to Great Yarmouth tomorrow. Eloise Sheehan has had a car crash.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's so, yeah, I thought so. It was, and she was resting her shoulder because she's also desperate to get to Great Yarmouth. I don't know why. Kira Osbrook is here. Yay! And so is Phil Hamlin-Williams. Yay! And so, as we've just heard, is Fergus. Yeah. So who do you want to chat to about Halloween, werewolves, or anything else on that particular point of view? I mean, and are you trick-or-treating tomorrow, William, or is it a case of, no, my pumpkins are in perfect shape, I don't need to go trick-or-treating at all?
I'm definitely trick-or-treating. I stay here. The kids come round and they know to knock on the door because there'll be a pumpkin in the window. And then I open the door and I hopefully give them the shock of their lives when they see this sort of zombie in front of them.
Yeah. That's what we like to, you know, encourage. You know, zombies worthwhile sort of accessing in so many ways. Do you get many zombies at the Drill Hall, or is that just a case of course not? We have wonderful entertainment. People aren't sort of zombified by the horror.
We do. We definitely have them.
Yeah.
If you're not looking out carefully, they'll be there.
They are.
They're called students.
They are called students.
On a drunken night out, yeah.
Anyway, from the department of, obviously, who's running the country at present... Official sneak preview of the election campaign that's being run by various parties in the run-up to December 12th. Not sure whether Dominic Cumming actually had that right in mind when he was putting that thing together, but still, never mind. It's the scary mind of DC. Anyway, enough of that.
Right. Very good. Yeah, it's putting me in the mood for Halloween. And it's horrible.
Yeah. And just think what might have happened if things had worked out in another dimension. Let's not talk about that because we're still connected, just about, and hanging on in there. Who do you wish to chat to? William.
Kira, please.
Nice.
Yes, Kira.
Hello, William. How are you?
I'm in good shape, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited for tomorrow, for Halloween.
Right. Okay. So the question is, what do we make of the sequel to The Shining, which is coming out tomorrow?
I don't think it's good. But it's really blunt. I'm sorry to be really blunt, but I've seen my friend showed me the trailer because he's a really big movie buff, and I had to watch The Shining many years ago. But no, I don't like it. I don't understand how it relates, if I'm honest, to The Shining, and at the same time I don't know, it just doesn't scare me. It doesn't seem disturbing enough.
Right, okay. Wow. Well, you must be a tough nut if you're not scared.
Yeah,
by that.
I'd say so.
I did say things get a bit scary when people actually start walking through that. Shining, Phil, are you familiar with the...
Oh, yeah. Yes. But, you know,
having
made The Shining, why bother to make anything else?
Hasn't got the...
Red rum.
He hasn't got the...
Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick.
Dan
Is that who it was? I'm sorry, I thought it was Steven Spielberg. It's so much I know about myself.
Steven probably wasn't born.
No, he was. He was actually making a thing called Duel at the time of The Shining, and he'd also made episodes of Rod Serling's Night Gallery, which indeed Robin Pierce has commented on as one of the top 20 1970s wonderful American fantasy shows in the latest edition of Starburst magazine. Having listened to some of the editorial conversations there. It's a hoot. So much you can do with this, honestly, but we won't, because clearly, you know, there comes a time we just want to ease back as we reach 22 minutes past 5 o'clock, at least in Lincoln time. So, Fergus, The Shining, the sequel?
I think it's intriguing. I remember getting the book for my brother a few Christmas ago. He enjoyed it, so I think he might be checking it out. I may go and check it out. I may need to rewatch The Shining first. You know, it's iconic, really. You know, Jack Nicholson bursting through the door.
Yeah. And Phil? The Shining?
I will stick with the original.
Yeah. So that's pretty much identified that as a topic. William, where else do you wish to take? Would you like to find out some more?
Well, what about horror films per se, because I have gone right off the pot from the sequel to The Shining, which I will have a stab at, but I unwittingly blundered into a horror film about 3 months ago, The Curse of La Llorona, and I had to leave after about 3 minutes. It was awful.
Is it really that bad?
Well, not bad. I mean, terrifying.
Have you reached that stage where effectively you become overly sensitive to such things? Because you realise, William, that there are possibly more days behind you than lie in front of you, and that mortality is approaching, and you never quite know when your number is up and you'll give up on that oxygen habit and check into the Wooden Waldorf.
Yeah. I'm aware that maybe I've just got more delicate sensitivities these days, but horror films do not really do it for me anymore.
Mm. I can appreciate that, and I think it's a well sort of said thing to actually sort of address that and take that to the fore, really, because you know, although it's all Hallow's Eve special. So I mean, do you think in terms of the Halloween system that maybe, just maybe, we've actually got to the stage of, you know, if only those Celtic forefathers hadn't actually exported this off to America to enable them or America to actually export it back to us in such a way that, you know, because I'm of the generation, and I think Phil might just be as well, that actually Halloween was never the big thing. It was kind of like something that was there, and now it's like it starts pretty much after Easter's passed
well,
by, really.
You would trick or treat.
Would you?
As a child, I'm fairly certain we did that.
Well, in Teesside.
The thing that we didn't have, and here he climbs on his hobby horse, is the ludicrous amount of disposable plastic.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. You know, how many containers of plastic has Halloween produced this year? Crazy.
It's clearly, you know, the horror that we're creating amongst ourselves with respect to that plastic alone. And you know, there's only so much we can actually take when it comes to that plastic, because it's not fantastic, even though Barbie actually once claimed that it actually was. Once again, William, you've actually opened up a whole range of sort of activities in terms of that, which really, again, it's the reason you are a regular on the programme, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have to sing to my supper. I think the Halloween is new in England, but in Scotland, I've got a number of mates in their 60s who had the equivalent and were guising.
Oh, sorry. You talk about guising, and already, you know, we get cats and bubbling cauldrons from that point of view. But you're quite right. For those guisers who want to actually say, when shall we three meet again, fire and brimstone and such like, and please put the cat out. It's when they start spraying as well, it's too much. What sort of things did you get involved with respect to guising, William?
Well, it was effectively trick-or-treating, probably more trickery than treat, but yeah, they were just going around monstering adults, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, never mind. Sometimes... Phil, any questions you'd like to put to William?
Well, I'm going to ask William whether he has come across a crime author called Ambrose Parry.
Ambrose Parry? Yeah. No, I'm... Sure,
Ambrose,
tell me about Ambrose.
Okay, Ambrose Parry, in fact, is two people, but so be it. He's writing about crime in Edinburgh in about 1850.
Okay.
And it's a stunningly well-researched book, because one of the two writers actually is a medical person and has done her research of medicine in the mid-19th century. And some of the description is truly gruesome and would beat any horror film.
Bear in mind, William is a romantic novelist.
Well, there you are.
So we're going to have some of this. I mean, it's rather like watching Pennyworth on the new sort of Amazon stars. If you're used to the old traditional Alfred, the butler of Batman, there's a lot of effing and jeffing and a lot of blood-curdling material that goes on in there, has to be said. Although Rita Ora is very good. Actually, it's not Rita Ora, it's Paloma Faith. I'm just looking at the clock, actually, and I've realised that it's time that Fergus put those last two questions to you, William. You see? People are knocking on the door. Sorry. Move on, Fergus.
Yeah, okay.
Answer that door.
William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone with us on the show this evening?
For goodness sakes.
I've loved it. Thank you.
Lord.
And it's been entertaining and informative.
And we'll be joining us again next week.
I certainly will. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to answer the door. Yeah, it's okay. Just calm down. It will work out okay in the end. I mean, really, there comes a time where you just... See, this is not going to happen in Nebraska. People will actually turn around and say, I said, open the door. And thankfully, we can at least welcome an ace author and indeed native of Broken Bow, Nebraska, to the program now for his debut. It's the awesome novelist, Carson Vaughan. Carson, oh, Lord. Welcome to the Midweek Drive pre-Halloween special.
How
are
you? Thank you very much, Al.
Good. Excellent stuff.
I'm doing well.
Well, I've got to say, the first thing when I realised that you're a native of Broken Bow, Nebraska, that's the opening episode of course, Star Trek Enterprise that took place. It's where the Klingons will actually have first contact sometime in the middle of the century. Or is that a case of you weren't aware of that?
You know, I won't pretend that I am a Trekkie, but I do like that fact. I'll start deploying it now.
Well, there you go. Now, in the tradition of obviously some of the best reportage, people like John McPhee, Truman Capote, the whole notion of This American Life, it's fair to say that your latest text, which is the awesome Zoo Nebraska, really echoes that whole notion of, as indeed Kurt Anderson has written, Zoo Nebraska is Great Plains Gothic, Fargo meets S-Town meets Alexander Payne, a riveting tale of quixotic hopes, or in Don Quixote, quixotic hopes and dreams and bad blood, all of it carefully, knowingly, sympathetically told. So clearly awesome praise there, Carson. Share with us how you got involved with this part of America which kind of in the current sort of climate sometimes gets forgotten about and maybe we're losing it somehow.
Yeah, that's right. Well, like you said, I am from Broken Bow, and that is like a small farming and ranch town right in the middle of the state of Nebraska. And so that was 3 hours away from the town that my book focuses on, called Royal Nebraska. And so I was actually still an undergraduate at the university, and I happened to pass through this town. And my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, she just kind of pointed out the window and said to me, oh, hey, that's where Reuben got shot. And I had no idea who Reuben was. And Royal is so small that I didn't even know that we were in a community as we were passing through it. So I had a few questions for her, and one thing led to another, and come to find out that this town of 65 people in northeast Nebraska had a zoo for over 20 years that grew sort of wildly out of control, up until the point in 2005 when four chimpanzees got loose from their cage and ran around town. And this is not a spoiler for the book because the book is not specifically about the escape, but tragically the community had to shoot and kill three out of the four of those chimpanzees. And so the book called Zoo Nebraska, The Dismantling of an American Dream, looks kind of at how this community, a rural community, dealt with having an attraction as large as this zoo and also how it dealt with that attraction kind of imploding on itself.
As we said, a resonant true story of small-town politics and community perseverance and of decent people and questionable choices. I think there was a movie, obviously, called We Built a Zoo, or We Bought a Zoo, thank you, Fergus, that was around it. Kind of, did it have echoes of that, Carson, that we were sort of coming through with this? Again, you know, the notion of overreaching, perhaps, for all the right intentions, but ultimately ending in a challenge. Mm.
Yeah, I can't really say there's any parallels to that movie. It's in many ways a fairly dark story, but one that struck me as much more realistic. You know, the zoo got started by a local kid who had always wanted to work with great apes. He was offered an assistantship by Diane Fossey, who was the biggest primatologist of her day. And just before this man was set to go and work with her, that's when she was murdered in Rwanda. And so he pivoted and came back to his tiny little town with a single adolescent chimpanzee. And so through the course of the 240 pages of this book, we see a man who's just doggedly chasing his dream, trying to do primate research, trying to keep this fledgling facility in his small hometown open. And he's just hitting one roadblock after the next. At one point, he gets a donation from Johnny Carson, the king of late night, who grew up sort of in that area. And that sounds like it would be a great thing, but for the man who started this zoo, it turned out to be more of a curse. He was ready to quit and be done with it and move on with his life right when this donation came in. And so he just hits one roadblock after the next, but In some ways, you have to admire him for chasing his dream, and in other ways, it's fair to say that he made some pretty big mistakes along the way.
Now, Carson, your works appeared in the New Yorker, the New York Times, the Paris Review, the Guardian, and Standard, the Pacific Standard, etc. So you've certainly built up a routine. But this is your debut novel. I mean, that's it's a fantastic way to actually go in from that point of view to actually sort of, in the words of the actual ebook liner, timely requiem for rural America in the throes of extinction.
Yeah, I mean, it took me you know, basically 10 years to write and report this book, and that's because some of the characters didn't want to talk, so it just took a ton of perseverance. But to write a nonfiction reported book that feels novelistic, that feels almost fictional, it just takes a ton and ton of time. It requires you to meet with these characters frequently to really understand their lives and their desires and, you know, grow some empathy for them and trust along the way. And so it was definitely a huge effort and different than some of the magazine reporting that I've done in the past.
As you say, the novel Zoo Nebraska, The Dismantling of an American Dream, opens up a whole range of things. Let's introduce you to the team in the studio. We've got Phil and Fergus and Kira. Phil, any questions you'd like to put to Carson?
Well, it's just an observation. It is fascinating as you go around this country, and I'm certain the same is true of the States. You come across towns you've never been to before, and they have a story. It might be a story, there might be a statue or something like that. And each town has its own story, and what you've done here is you've dug deep and written it in, as you say, in a non-fiction but novel form. I think it's a fabulous thing to do.
Thank you. Well, I'm really glad you brought up that point, because it is true. Every small town does have their story. But my hope is that if I sort of drilled in deep enough into this one story of this one small town, that we might start to hit some of those universal themes that everybody can kind of relate to in their own way.
Well, I'm certain you're right. You know, I think, you know, to write a good story really does dig deep into who we are as human beings. And, you know, certainly reading the reviews as I am on my handheld device, you know, you've done it, and you know, huge credit. The only other observation.
Well, thank you very much.
The other observation that I would make is you are, of course, a journalist.
So was Charles Dickens. So,
well, no, you know, but the point I'm making is it is unbelievably difficult to make a living as a novelist, or indeed a writer of nonfiction. You have to do something else. And to be a journalist as you are, you know, fits perfectly.
I've got a particular liking, Carson, for the blog entry we put together, which was Midwestern Strange, a tour of the utterly bizarre and all too human, hunting monsters, Martians, and the weird in flyover country, which is awesome. I'm sure Phil Leonis, our ace director of The Truth Is Out There, will be fascinated with that in Los Angeles. Fergus, any thoughts from yourself?
You said earlier that you said that it was a non-fiction book, but it came off being a little bit novelistic. Did you find that you had to, with all the information you gathered, did you feel that there was some information that you maybe had to admit in order to fit kind of the main themes that you'd been finding during your research? Or did you find any difficulties in terms of compiling all the information into one novel?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, it's part of the reason it took me 10 years to write is because there's always a piece when you're looking at it as like a long-form narrative that you feel like you're missing or you can't do without. And so, for example, the main character in the book, he didn't talk to me for the first 8 years. He rejected all my interview requests for 8 years. And so I had planned to move forward with the book, but what I was doing in the meantime was interviewing everybody around him to fill in that gap that he had left in his absence. And so, yeah, you hit challenges like that all the time, and sometimes you can sort of wait them out or work through them, and at other times you just have to say, well, my first priority is to the truth and to objectivity, and I'm a journalist, so I can't just make this up. And you have to just live.
Oh, you can, Carson. There are lots of so-called journalists who do just make this stuff up. Obviously, you're a proper journalist. But that's just by the by.
Don't get to... Well, yeah, that's right.
Kira, any thoughts from yourself?
To be fair, most of my questions have already been answered.
Well, then,
but,
I'll take you through this line of the utterly bizarre and all too human. On February 21st, 1995, the Weekly World News, a supermarket tabloid, published a story about Carson's hometown of Broken Bow, Nebraska, population 3,800, or rather, about a hermit who supposedly lived in a remote cabin several miles north. Man famous for horn on his head is dead at 67, the headline claimed. His name was Horace Easterwood, and none of us... Not Carson's friends, not his family, not his manager, the local radio station, who quickly inquired on air, had ever heard of him. But apparently he was a real gentleman, and now he was dead. I mean, Carson, was that something which, again, I mean, it's a movie just waiting to be happened there, to be developed there, surely?
Well, I mean, I liked that story a lot. Of course, what you're reading from is my review of another guy's book.
Yeah,
it's about the Midwest. But that was a story from my childhood that I had experienced that was sort of in the same vein as his book. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by sort of the quirky and the strange and the subcultures. And those are the sort of stories that I gravitate to. So that was a fun one.
Freelance writer, author, editor, you do it all from that sort of point of view. Have you got any advice for any young journalists who might be listening to this in terms of where would you actually start with? Would it be a case of go to college, or is it a case of go to college and make sure that you actually keep your eyes and ears open for, as Phil said, the fact that every one of us actually has a story there if you're prepared to actually dig a little bit deeper?
Yeah, I mean, always, of course, maintain your curiosity and keep your eyes and ears open. But I think it's also always smart to just find the stories that are near you, no matter where you're from or where you're currently stationed. Like, stories are everywhere all the time, and it's, you know, follow your interests. That's the one thing that I have run into in the past, where when I feel like I'm doing my worst writing, it's because I'm writing about something that I don't care about at all, you know. So it may be a strange topic that you're into, but follow it, because that passion will get you through to the end. You'll feel more proud of the product.
Well, I'm actually using the mystical world set together by Mark Zuckerberg of the Facebook to actually, as we speak, actually formally like your webpage, author Carson Vine, or Carson Vaughan, I should say, on Facebook. So I just you know, and my colleagues in the studio will confirm, Kira, I have actually just done that. I have actually clicked like.
It's
exactly. It's there from that point of view. Kira, any thoughts now?
I believe.
It did have a question. I had a question. It's literally, you shouldn't put me on the spot like that.
Carson, you've clearly sort of you've stymied the whole thing. Let's go back to Phil very briefly. Any sort of final thoughts for yourself?
I just can't wait to read it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a key thing. We must get hold of a copy of this Dismantling
American
Dream. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's useful as an author to effectively sort of have a readership, because otherwise it's just like, you know, one hand clapping in the dark, one sort of ghost in the shadows. Carson, are you a keen celebrant of trick or treat? Is Halloween something which in Nebraska and indeed in Broken Bow you will actually celebrate on? And is there a favourite costume that you might be actually sort of saying, yeah, I'm going to be Jonathan Archer in the Broken Bow episode of Star Trek Enterprise?
You know, I feel like now I'm charged with that mission, so maybe I'll have to.
I think so. I'd say make it so, but that's more Jean-Luc Picard, but still, that's a different there. Actually, I'll put in two final things. Carson, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program this evening, or indeed, actually, this afternoon in Nebraska time?
That's right. I have had a blast. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate all the questions.
This is good. And the next question is, will you be kind enough to return in the very near future? Will you come back?
I would absolutely love to. Thank you.
Carson Vaughan, we say a round of applause, please, for Carson. Yay! And now, keeping that Valentine's Day thing, sometimes it just becomes all one blur.
They're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family. Their house is a museum, when people come to see them, they really are a scream, the Addams Family. Neat, sweet,
petite. So get a witch's shawl on, a broomstick you can crawl on. We're gonna pay a call on the Addams Family.
How many times? So, Kira, what are you doing on November the 15th, 2019?
I don't know.
The day after Prince Charles celebrates another birthday. Fergus, what are you doing on November the 15th, 2019?
Probably writing something.
Probably writing on the front.
Yeah, I'm working on my essay. That's what I'm doing on November the 15th.
And Phil, pray tell, apart from looking after the goodness that is the joys of the drill hall in Lincoln up the hill, not quite to the top of the hill, but midway, what will you be doing on November the 15th?
I will be absolutely in heaven looking after two gorgeous granddaughters.
Wow. Well, wrong answer in every single case there, has to be said. Completely wrong answer. In fact, I'm almost tempted to actually say,
get out.
No, because it's a poetry slam event. I mean, it is, honestly, it's a poetry slam event at the Brewer.
Get out.
And actually, when I received an invite... Honestly, but we have to get out and about. Gemma Baker sent me one of those Facebook things saying, give this whole notion about poetry's about to get weird. How weird is weird, Gemma Baker? And surely it should have been Halloween.
Hello. Yes, it's going to get a bit weird. It's going to get a bit louder and a bit stranger, I'm glad to say.
Okay, so strange, weird poetry. I mean, Phil, it's a fair point to actually say that when... you realised Gemma Baker was not going to be in the studio, in the house. Your head sank and you just thought, oh, what is the point of living anymore?
Gemma, I was so disappointed. Hi. I still, you know, hear that wonderful piece you did at the Drill Hall gala evening. It resonated so strongly that it's down to each and every one of us whether we want to keep that lovely place.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be problematic when I got the message via social media that Gemma couldn't actually be present in the studio this very day. But, you know, Kira was equally devastated. It's probably going to have therapy for a considerable period of time.
Yeah. You see, you're very popular.
And Fergus, likewise. So.
Well, I'm currently at home making a two-tier birthday cake and a Halloween costume, so it's all go at the moment.
What is the Halloween costume in question?
Sorry.
What's the costume you're making?
It's an anatomically correct spider, so it's taking a bit of work.
Right. You have to get it right.
I think that's always important. Although, you know, even with anatomically correct spiders, and we're not talking Kafkaesque aspects here, although we could be, actually, given the whole sort of system, watch out for the scary rocky chair. Yeah, that scary rocky chair. Indeed, the rocking chair. We'll leave that in there because I like a little bit of scary child's voice going, hello. Come, seek me out now. Talk to us, Gemma, if you can, about the joys of November the 15th and the poetry slam that's all going to be awesome.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be a monthly event. It's a poetry slam. So for all those who don't know, it's kind of like a regular poetry reading, but it's scored and timed. So a bit of friendly competition. We have 15 poets performing, coming from around the country and locally. And it's going to be at the wonderful Jolly Brew, which, of course, is another venue that
has been saved.
Yes, it's been saved. Thank the heavens, it's been saved. And we want to keep it going, and we want people to support it and for it to stay there. So I'm going to be organising more events there as well. So, yeah, it's all about bringing the community together and having a bit of fun. And, it's completely free. We've got free sarnies. We've got some live music. It's going to be a really good night.
So let me just rephrase that question again. Kira, what will you be doing on November the 15th?
Definitely attending. If it's got free sandwiches.
Yay!
Then I freeze it.
Free sandwiches, social media, bish, bash, bosh, sorted.
I should always start with the free sandwiches. That's always the center.
That will draw always guaranteed to draw students in.
But Brewer Slam, poetry's about to get weird with free sandwiches. That's all you need, you know, to sort of make that whole thing put together. Fergus, what will you be doing on the... Will you be writing about free sandwiches at the Jolly Brewer?
I may, after I've been to it. I may do a little review of it.
The 15th. Yeah. And Phil, will you be bringing your grandchildren along?
Well, my grandchildren live in Valencia, so we will not be here.
Honestly.
Live stream it.
Well, that's probably for the best. It's not quite child-friendly. So,
Mind you, these two girls, their dad is heavily into zombies.
Okay.
And so they have been very, very used to being extremely scared from the day they were born. So they're totally immune.
Yeah, I know, it's just too much. Step away from the whole thing. It's just too weird from that point of view. How can people stay in touch with this and yourself, Gemma Baker, via, as we like to say in Hull, the socials?
Well, of course, we're on the good old Facebook. We're at Brewer Slam. You can find us on there. We're not really on any other social media at the moment.
You're not doing Instagram?
Not on the Instagram. I don't particularly have a high-tech phone, so Instagram's out of the question at the moment. But you can always pop along to the Brewer or give the Brewer a ring as well and ask them on their socials. And, we'll be there every third Friday of every month with free sarnies and some cracking poets.
So you see, if you can't, for whatever bizarre reason, like being in Valencia, make the actual first 15th of November thing, there's obviously perhaps 15th of December, well, at least the December sort of third Friday. Third Friday in December, Phil. So
third Friday is the 20th. Yeah, 20th of December is the next
one. What wonderful
work.
Christmas. Exactly. Really, it's amazing how it happens on the same day every year. You know, 25th of December, it's like relentless. It's just sometimes it just gets completely out of all sorts of other bits and pieces. And Gemma, when are you going to come back to the Siren Studios? Because clearly we were anticipating you being here today, but... tragically, you said no.
I will come back whenever you like. I will make it a priority in my diary.
There you go.
I will let everything slide, and I'll come straight there.
Now, Gemma, we're not expecting you to. You've got children to look after. You've got responsibilities.
No, they'll be responsibilities. Fine. They can look after themselves. This is important.
Well, that's true, of course. But at the end of the day, you still have to look after those teeny responsibilities because remember, they are our future.
They are.
Halloween, it is important to, because sometimes we forget, Phil, you know. I mean, well, maybe I do, because I don't have any. Children, that is. Last two questions. We've kind of already answered the first, but Kira, go for it, please, with Gemma Baker.
Okay, hello, Gemma. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, this evening?
Yeah, whatever. Sometimes Gemma lives in a different time zone, so it might be last week, actually, from that point of view.
Yes, it's very true.
Absolutely, always.
Mm-hmm. And will you be joining us again soon?
Absolutely, and in person this time.
Closet, open your closet, move in, open, set us free. Oh, is all she woven, your closet, spread it out so well.
Yes, she's gone. Quite simply, headed off. She couldn't cope any longer with yet another rendition of... Yeah, clearly, the cat's not happy. Please, send for a vet. Send for a student vet. Send for any vet. Zoe, can you please put this cat out of its misery? Because you can tell it's not happy. I mean, you know, we've told it to give its paws out of the cauldron, but it's insisting on yeah, it's just, it's not, you know. You see? Told you.
Take
your cat's paws out of the pot, out of the cauldron, Kira. Lord, like, you're the end in tears. Sorry, Zoe. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive. In terms of the Royal Veterinary College, do you sort of engage in actually dealing with, you know, friendly rodents or bats, etc., or indeed cats in general? And if you, is it a case of, yeah, of course, it's the Royal Veterinary College. Every Halloween, we just go bat crazy here.
Do we deal with cats?
Bats. Bats and cats,
oh,
actually.
Bats.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or horses.
We've got an exotic fish at uni, so I'm sure they're very good at dealing with things.
Well, let's face it, last week when you actually trumped all exotic pets by saying you'd been helping to heal an axolotl, this is serious stuff on that sort of basis, so we appreciate that, and I think it's the reason Fergus came back, actually.
Yeah, I heard it last week.
Exactly, it's critical. So, Kira's in the studio, Fergus in the studio, and Phil Hamlin-Williams, a writer. A wonderful writer of... I mean, we haven't even mentioned your books, Phil, so go on, shameless plug. You've talked about, obviously, your day job as looking after the Lincoln Drill Hall, great entertainment there, lunchtime concerts, etc. But you've also written books that Zoe could even purchase if she wished to.
I have.
She has. He has, Zoe, honestly.
My most recent, a biography of the man who discovered Charlotte Bronte.
Wow.
And... people seem to be saying nice things about it, which is rather nice.
I'm not surprised, Phil. It was an excellent book. I mean, I've just read sort of some of the pieces, but I look forward to settling down with it, basically, and sort of reading over the festive period, shall we say. It's a treat for
something. That sounds encouraging.
Exactly. So, Zoe, what have you been getting up to today? And is it a case of will you be celebrating All Hallows Eve? Do the vets effectively have this trick or treat where they'll actually say to prospective pet owners who might be traumatised already, well, do you want the good news? Or the... No, I won't even go there. Just...
Oh, gosh.
Mm.
What have I been up to? I've been in uni today, so yep. We were on procedures. So... dealing with some cats and dogs, no bats, and no axolotls today, so that was quite good. But yeah, hopefully not too many fireworks.
No, I mean, actually, on a very serious note, and we'll talk about this, actually, because next week it'll be past it. For goodness sakes, keep your pets indoors and safe. It's something we say year in, year out. Our furry cousins and friends cannot actually cope. But Spike, and you know Spike, Zoe, because you've worked with him.
Oh, yeah.
Spike gets a bit nervous, not only with giant onions, but also with all sorts of other areas there. Yes, Phil, that is a genuine onion there. Zoe Ball. Easy mistake to make. Quite happily. Zoe Jameson and the giant onion, which in many ways was kind of like a precursor to the whole Halloween thing. But the point being, fireworks keep your cats and dogs and pets, axolotls or otherwise, indoors and safe. I mean, do you have any other advice, Zoe, that you can actually share in terms of, you know, what's the best way forward? I mean, apart from earmuffs and such like.
I'm not sure. Keep them inside, I suppose, and the noise out as much as possible.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
It's a scary time of year for them.
Yeah, listen, for them, scary time of year for me. You know, it's too much on that basis. I think it's outrageous the way things actually sort of get working through that. Although, as we said, Chloe Rose is performing, I think, at the Lincolnshire Firework Festival, in which case I'd say that's what we'd recommend. Go to a genuine, sorted-out firework festival. That's important thing, rather than actually setting off your own bangers and such like. It's not good, and it's not clever. And honestly, our line would be quite simple. If you actually came into the studio with that, it would be no messing about. Exactly. You know, I might keep this for year in, year out, actually. I might sort of drop the last two questions and say, you know, just keep that going. It's good enunciation as well, I find, Phil, you know, which is rare these days when you actually get it. The proper pronunciation of the T in both cases there.
For
not,
certain.
Not get out, you know, not kind of get out there, but get out. Get out.
I think if you say it in a Scottish accent, I think it'd be more funny, so it would take the seriousness out of it, isn't it?
Would you like to demonstrate, Kira?
No, I'm not demonstrating.
It seemed like you were setting yourself up for something there.
I thought, sure enough, we'll actually be bringing in the old Allsbrooks, etc.
When Scottish people argue, it's funny. Or when they start shouting at you, it's funny.
Like, I don't think they
when
do.
When my mum shouts at me, I just laugh. I think it's so funny.
Is this the reason that ultimately we're not worried about the separation via a vote for independence? Because ultimately...
Scottish people are all mad. I mean, in the good way.
We do not support those opinions.
Yeah. And hasten to add, obviously, for legal ramifications, the views of some of our midweek drivettes do not necessarily reflect those of the station, because, you know, obviously, please. And these are not Scottish people. They genuinely make good people. Phil, any questions you'd like to put to Zoe about her work as a student vet? Only a few more months to go, or indeed any other sort of delights you'd like to share with her?
So what stretches before you in life after, you know, amazing
because
success?
Because let's face it, Zoe, it only lasts a short time.
It does.
It does.
It is over in a flash.
It's over in a flash, and before we know where we actually are, we're actually sort of down in that grave system and just, you know, we don't know where we're heading to. It could be up, it could be down.
You know, I stumbled upon a very old James Herriot episode.
Mm.
And I couldn't believe how graphic it was.
It was Zoe's first telephonic link after we realised that she was a proper midweek drivette and really had all the chutzpah and abilities and skill sets that we actually need to have in a midweek drivette. I did actually raise the, has she ever actually put her hands in a certain part?
Absolutely.
And she coped very well, because you have, haven't you, Zoe?
Yeah, it's part of our training.
And that's the future. Your hand, indeed, your whole arm.
You hear that every day.
Yeah, exactly. It's why we're proud to metaphorically shake Zoe by the hand every time she goes on the midweek drive, because it opens up every kind of wonderful thing that we can actually wish for. Yeah, quite simple. Oh dear, weather's taking a turn for the worse, but still. In Northern Ireland, Zoe. I mean, do you have many trick-or-treaters there, or is it just a case of, don't be silly, we might be Celtic, but we actually have much more sensible activities?
Yeah, there are trick-or-treaters in Ireland, but when I was growing up, we lived quite far from anywhere, so it would have taken a few days to get to this.
And for one stick of candy, is it really worth that? Do you know, a 26-mile round-trip hike dressed as E.T.? just to, you know, not knock on the door with respect to the Jameson household. I mean, even if he did actually start off with, you know... It's not going to work. Quite simply. Anyway, shape or form. Actually, Phil, what are your memories of how... I mean, you talked about trick-or-treating. Did you ever treat... Was it always treats that you got? Presumably it would, because I can imagine you being a cherubic child. And you were.
I guess the memory is probably stronger of my children, who were trick and treat, and certainly tricks were there, prepared, ready.
When they knock on, because sometimes I can get very irritated when somebody actually knocks on the door. But they're not, they're just persistent.
Frankly, for anyone to knock on the door is outrageous. Yeah. This is my space.
Exactly. That's very true.
Postman or not.
Use the doorbell. But, it's not as though it's a line from that. So, Zoe, having identified that you lived well into not the Outer Hebrides, because obviously that's Scotland as opposed to, Ireland. Who knows where she'll end up. But in terms of the country, did you used to make your own entertainment, or was it just a case of, well, it's Halloween, so, let's just engage in some pagan ritual?
My mum provided the trick-or-treat for us, fortunately.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's it works well, and it's what mothers do really perfectly well. Anyway. Yeah. Kira, any questions for our student vet? Because you have a little doggy, don't you?
Yes, I do have a little doggy.
Would you like to explain?
He's a little...
Yes.
I'm not going to say it, but he is
plain. He's little Shih Tzu.
Yes, he's one of those.
It's not a derogatory term. It's actually a breed of dog.
It is definitely a breed of dogs.
It's said in a certain way.
It's how it's pronounced. I gave Kira the opportunity to say it in a Scottish accent, which would have been hilarious.
No, because that would come out wrong.
But so he's a little Shih Tzu, and Zoe, what sort of advice would you give Kira in terms of? Especially
because he's very. Oh, actually, Zoe, I have a question. Very, very weird question. And you should say, oh, God, because it is an all God question, to be fair. Can a dog or any animal be gay? Is that an actual thing? Can a
same-sex relationships in the animal kingdom.
Because I believe mine is.
Well, Zoe, this could actually rewrite veterinary history.
It's amazing. It's...
And conceivably natural selection, as we've known it under Darwin.
You can have animals that can change their genders. Like, there are ones that are kind of gender fluid. Yeah, those are possible.
I'm sure it's a possibility, yeah.
Good diplomatic answer there, Zoe. I'm very impressed. I'm sure it's a possibility. Hold fire. Please get me off this call. Ask me the last two questions. Yeah. I need to go now. That's a subtext. there's only a certain amount you can actually work through before you think what's happening on that system. Actually, where are we reaching you today? Are you in London, or are you sort of in other parts of the globe?
Yeah, I'm in London today. We are in our small animal hospital in Camden this week, so quite an experience.
And is that with the joys of Dewberry?
No, with uni, actually.
Oh, right. Very good. Excellent. Well, as I say, we may well be heading down to London in the not-too-distant future, and I've given you all the details on a voice message that you can delete as and when you basically sort of say.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
I can't cope with this in any sort of rationale, and let's just not go there. That's the important thing.
I've been saving lives.
This is true. Saving lives, quite literally, because if she saves the pet's life, she's probably put a few more years onto the owners as well, because we know the kind of stresses and strains that that owners can go through. Kira's just manifested it there in terms of the gender fluidity of her little Shih Tzu, which is... And the name, of course, is?
Zippy.
The Labradoodle. I still think it's primarily Zippy the Labradoodle.
The Labrador.
That's a completely different breed of dog from... I'm confused now. I thought Zippy was actually a small, tiny...
Yeah, my dog was called... was a Labrador.
All right, well, in which case...
This is bad.
Yeah, clearly. I thought you had a little tiny dog, so that's why... Never mind. It'll be even more confused because it doesn't realise whether it's a Labrador or pops a Shih Tzu. That's one of the two things.
It's changing its breed.
So Zoe, the other question we've got to ask you, dogs changing breeds, is that something that happens on a sort of fairly regular basis?
Possibility.
Yeah, that's so true. You're listening to the 4,000th podcast. The 4,000th podcast.
Wow.
I know.
I wonder how many of those contain Ben Lewis.
Not too many, actually. Yeah. but he's always with us, and indeed is in the upcoming 2020 calendar. Yeah. Phil, would you like to put those last two questions to Zoe, please? Because I feel that of the four of us, you're probably the only person who's sensible enough to actually deliver them in a coherent and rational manner.
Well, let's see. Have you had a reasonably enjoyable telephonic communication with us this afternoon?
I have indeed. Thank you very much.
And would you be brave enough to join us again one day?
Hopefully.
yeah, exactly. That's why ZJ is the best DJ you could ever wish for, especially if you're looking for a vet. Well done, Zoe. Speak soon.
Thanks so much. Yes.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy, and let me try with pleasured hands
to take you in this time to
promised lands,
to show you everyone it's the time of the season for love.
What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy? He rich.
Is he rich like me? Has he taken us
any time to show
you what you need to live?
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why
I really want to know.
Said that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but it seems as it could also be the happiest meal of the day, with the nearly 9 in 10 British folk citing family time as their favourite way to start the day, and certainly in the East Midlands that is very much the case, with over 8 in 10 people saying that having breakfast with their family gets their day off to a good start. Now, speaking as one who occasionally, I must admit, I go through that notion of a bit like the grumps, as it goes, oh no, what's it all about? The best person to actually speak to with respect so this is ace family psychologist, the wonderful Linda Blair. How are you, Linda?
I'm very well, thank you. Having had a family breakfast.
Well, there you are, you see. Now, this survey from Nutella reveals top 10 ways that Britons achieve happiness in the morning and get their day off to a great start. And that notion of spending time with your family, even if it's just for a short time, 900 seconds, 15 minutes, is actually highly beneficial.
Well, that's right. I mean, when Nutella gave me the statistics on this Happy Portion campaign, I was surprised how high it was, because, of course, in clinic, you get a lot of kids, especially teenagers, saying, oh, my family, you know. But actually, they need it. They need that knowledge that they belong somewhere and that somebody's taken some trouble and set some food out for them, you know. It matters.
I was intrigued to find that right up at number two was hearing your favourite song on the radio. I thought that was old-fashioned now, this radio listening malarkey. I thought it was everybody actually was downloading material, but actually having favourite songs played. Yes, yeah, it's well in there. Take your lie in, well, I can understand that. Waking up to freshly laundered bed sheets, presumably not whilst you've actually sort of been tuffed out of bed in the middle of the night to actually get them freshly laundered. wouldn't be great.
I think all 10 of them relate to sort of two themes, comfort and belonging. You look at them, because comfort is when you're overtired, you want extra sleep. But, I mean, if you look at it with that those two topics, that's what we want. We want to start the day feeling safe and comfortable, and we want to belong, you know there's somewhere we can fall back on.
I was quite pleased to say that nobody actually put playing my favourite Call of Duty game from PlayStation or various other sort of activities on the whole thing, so that was nice. Although television does make an appearance, and it seems that actually watching favourite episodes of TV shows, presumably with the days of actually if you don't watch it, you've missed it, etc., have sort of emerged. You can watch it whenever you wish, basically.
But it's clear down at number 8 out of 10.
Yeah,
that's true. I think people really do like each other. They don't like to admit it, but they clearly did to a survey because Nutella got those answers, and I am thrilled. I'm so pleased.
I must admit, I mean, when I was an undergraduate myself, I seemed to be experiencing a breakfast time with a family that were pretty much rather like the Brady Bunch crossed with the Partridge Family. Was that just an ideal, or was that just a case of, I don't know, maybe they were just acting for my benefit, basically, but it was extraordinary in terms of that. Can we still get to that stage, or is that something we maybe aspire to as opposed to actualize?
You'll have days,
you know?
Yeah. We all have days. But one of the things that I suggest is that you have, first of all, you prepare the night before, so you're not all rushing around trying to get everything ready. So you put breakfast things out, and you put out the choices, making sure as parents that they're all choices you approve of, so the kid feels in control, but so are you. And you just have everything easy. And then when you spend time together, what you can do is say, look, there's only one rule. You don't have to talk, but if you talk, it has to be kind. And that's easy then. I mean, everybody understands that.
And would you say digital devices should be kept to one side, ideally, in terms of don't check your mobile phone and actually spend time scrolling,
etc.? Nutella and I agreed on that one. Yeah, I think it's better because what that does is that puts you out of now. And now is where you want to be if you want to be happiest. It's making you think, oh, gosh, my friends are waiting for me at school, or oh, I need to get this homework checked, or gosh, yesterday, whatever. It doesn't leave you here in now, right at the moment.
So presumably the best prescription would be ensure that you kind of allow time in the morning to actually have the breakfast, don't have an all panicked rush, etc. Plan ahead, and then hopefully you can accommodate these kind of things as well.
Yeah, because you don't need long. I mean, 10, 15 minutes is just plenty.
Apart from Nutella, was there anything else that effectively was suggested as the ideal breakfast in terms of consumption? I mean, does this work better with an all-English? Does it all better with a ham and eggs? Is it a case of, no, we want to go down to European bagel and baguette or whatever? Or was that for another survey?
No, I think I'm not a nutritionist, but I think I can say that the key word is balance. To have a bit of carbohydrates, a bit of protein, and a bit of fat, and you can have that in all kinds of fun ways, cereal with milk with a little dab of a treat Nutella on top, or you can do it in lots of ways, and if people feel they have choice, then that also makes them enjoy it more.
Well, with no fewer than 5 books published on the importance of spending quality time with friends, family and loved ones, you are the go-to person, Linda, when it comes to issues related to that. How can people find out more details about this survey and indeed your good self?
Well, for the survey, I would do www.nutella.com, and then they have, any click on that you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice of you to ask about me. I'm www.lindablair.co.uk. Thank you. That's kind.
Always vital, Linda, to recognize quality from that point of view. Linda, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Many thanks indeed. And I suppose all treats, no tricks whatsoever, which is great.
I know. Isn't that nice?
Yes, well, the scary laugh at the end possibly suggested she may have connections with the exorcist, but in a way to actually link up with our next guest in Los Angeles, of course. I feel, why not celebrate the bubonic plague? What fun, what delights, what wonderful people. Celebrating the North American presidential scene in the way that only they can. Phil Leonis, welcome to the program today on the auspicious time of basically being podcast 4000 and still in our first season. Amazing.
Not 4,000, 649 episodes, but yes, I think we will get to 652 episodes and then we'll take a week off and we will relaunch on the Odyssey Radio Network, broadcasting live at 9 p.m. Eastern Times on Monday, and it will be the official start of season two
of
Joe Pack Hollywood Hour. After a 12-and-a-half-year season one. That feels right.
Exactly.
Look, I'm so wrapped up in Halloween, and so perhaps, and I'm out of my mind on candy already, but all that aside, I listened to that interview, and there's no reason for me to think that that wasn't Linda Blair from The Exorcist. There's nothing that she said that would lead me aside from that. And, of course, I'm glad you followed up her lay person opinion on breakfast with a certified expert on breakfast as a duly designated member of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. Yeah. So,
you see, these shows are structured, Phil. You know, as I said, year in, year out, day in, day out. Even on the days where you actually used to listen to the whole show, even when you actually got that extra hour, etc., as opposed to becoming locked into.
But I don't have to because I know we're so simpatico now that you. For example, you referenced the bubonic plague while introducing me, which, and of course, I take it as a compliment. But the thing is, the bubonic plague has played a big role in my week. I mean, just today at the Breakfast Club, the scariest costume was someone who was there as a plague doctor.
Big beak, very big beak.
Yeah, that's scary. A lot of leather.
Yeah,
And
a nosegay to actually sort of ensure that the foul, pungent smells don't actually enter into the whole thing. It would be worth it.
Oh, I guess that's why. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Okay, I never thought about it. I just thought they were trying to scare away the evil spirits.
No.
Okay, there is a little bit of science. There is a little bit of science in each and every midweek draft. That's very exciting. But I went to the Magic Castle. And this is a place that I'm dying to take you if ever you decided to visit Los Angeles.
One day.
It's the Academy of Magical Arts, founded by the likes of Houdini. I saw a wonderful close-up magic performance by the great Zabrecki, who 20 years ago, before becoming a renowned magician, was actually the lead singer of the punk rock group Possum Dixon. And he left music behind to go into magic. And he's so weird and so delightful. But he does a trick called the bubonic balls. And that's a real name of it. We'll let everybody have a few moments to fill in their own punchlines.
Very true.
But it was a trick that goes back to kind of trying to outwit the evil spirits that were bringing the plague.
Exactly. Thank you. That was the bubonic
balls. Excuse me. It's all that Nutella that I had on my cereal this morning.
Exactly.
It wasn't...
Yeah, I know. It's just happiness is personified by getting your favorite TV episode or indeed hearing your favorite song on the radio. It's great.
You know, I love an English breakfast. I do love a traditional English breakfast, even though as I devour it and then I get up and I immediately call for, a paramedic.
Exactly.
But
Yeah. Well, never mind. Life continues. So, Phil, would you like to speak to your namesake, Phil Hamlin-Williams, or Fergus, or Kira? I'm just continuing to actually dig a hole for myself here with respect to obviously what's going on. We've got a few people who are a bit upset in the background, but never mind. They're probably Welsh people who didn't get to the Rugby World Cup final. So,
Well, I want to know two things. When are you sending me information so I can give every one of the aforementioned people the introductory jingle that they deserve on the show?
Super.
I'm waiting. I check my email hourly. I refresh. There's no information.
Soon.
So you answer that question, and then I would like everybody to tell me how they plan on celebrating Halloween. And if they have no plans, at least be person enough to make something up for me.
So let's go straight the way down the line too, because he's just completed almost his MA in journalism. It's the awesome Fergus, Leicester City 9, Southampton 0, Leicester City 9, Jeffs.
I might be watching Nightmare on Elm Street for the first time. I've found a copy of it in my house amongst a bunch of the DVDs. I've been watching some classic horror recently, Scream franchise, very enjoyable. Yes. And, yeah, I'll be spending Halloween with Freddy. Yeah.
Well, that's very good. I mean, it's Wes Craven, who did, of course, the Scream franchise.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And before that, and this is how I always advise people to develop and grow their knowledge of cinema. Take movies you like and then find out who made it and go back and see their earlier films. And that's
agree.
What you're doing. Yeah. And there is an actor in Nightmare on Elm Street named John Saxon, who I worked with, who is just the coolest. Not a household name anymore, but he was, he became a household name for several different generations. Like every 10 years, he would do some genre piece that would really break out. Like 10 years before Elm Street, he starred in Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee.
I've seen that.
And 10 years before that was a matinee idol doing the reluctant debutante. So he's one of these guys that maybe never became a superstar, but he just kept working so regularly, which means, quite frankly, you know what the heck you're doing. If you just keep working that long where different generations get to know you, it means you're the real deal. Who else wants to share exciting,
He was in Gene Roddenberry's Genesis or Earth 2 as well, and looked remarkably at certain aspects of his thing, like Marlon Brando, I feel. That's John Saxon. Yeah.
Really? Fergus was in that? I didn't know. I didn't think Fergus was old enough to have been in that.
He's a time traveller. Kira.
Who's next? Kira.
So, what am I doing tomorrow? Is that what?
Yeah.
Is that what the question is? I'm throwing a Halloween party tomorrow, so that would be interesting. I don't know if anyone will be able to remember what happens the next day, but it should be very fun.
Is that because you're actually employing hypnotists to actually blank people's minds?
Yes, that's
So, are you going to, as the hostess, will you be in costume for this?
This year I'm actually not going in costume because I know. I couldn't decide. I actually couldn't decide. And plus the costume I was going to...
Get out.
Okay, fine. I will tell you that. No, the costume that I was basically going to order, it was like a dark angel kind of thing, but it was coming from America. The waiting time was ridiculous. Mm. And I ordered it, I think...
Get out.
I will go. But no, everyone else is coming in fancy dress. I think we have someone coming as Pennywise. My friend's going as the Joker, but I don't think it will go very
which
well.
Joker? Cesar Romero.
Which one?
I think it's the
Jack
Heath
Nicholson?
Ledger one.
Heath Ledger.
Yeah,
Heath Ledger
classic.
One.
It's not too late to find. I mean. You live in an ancient Roman settlement town. I'm gonna suggest to you two words: plague doctor. I think you can find.
Thanks for that, Phil. I remember that. I will go and look for a plague doctor mask tomorrow.
quick hello to Penny Evans, who's also tuned into the program. Isn't that nice? He's even put spooky ghosts on there as well. Phil Hamlin-Williams.
So, tomorrow. I am going to WhatsApp my... WhatsApp my children.
Wow.
And get them
even Gemma Baker can't
use WhatsApp. To send images of my grandchildren.
Yes.
And we will have a competition to see whose Halloween outfit was the best.
Yeah.
With additional prizes for ones that are homemade. Yes. And contain no plastic whatsoever.
Yeah, see, that's important. It's important to teach the young people that holidays are competitions and that it's about winning.
Of course.
That's
forget all this. Yeah. It's the taking part that counts.
No, winning takes care of everything.
It's winning. Yeah. Apropos.
No, it's true. It's true. People say that they wish that sometimes, you know, Christmas could last year round, the spirit of Christmas. I think the spirit of winning, of cutthroat competition, is what I want to see year round. Yeah.
You see, that's new politic, new real politic for the Johnson Trump era.
I mean, you mentioned. You mentioned Trump, so I have to point out, in all fairness, that in the White House, it's actually Thanksgiving year-round because our president is constantly mishandling and pardoning turkey.
There you go. Ka-ching. Marvelous. He's not going to ask me, is he? Or is he? Do you think he wants to...
I want to know what you're doing. Yeah. Yeah. Of course I do.
Tomorrow night, I should, all being well, assuming she's recovered from her car crash... and indeed, assuming that Eva is on top form, it should be with Eva MacDonald and Eloise Sheehan and Sam Stone and David J. Howe and many other fine folk in a strange and bizarre holiday camp in Great Yarmouth, where we'll be actually partaking in the SF Weekender 10th Anniversary Award Ceremony in a Quentin Tarantino-themed party.
Nice.
I thought so.
Wow. So what will your costume be?
I figured the bride. No, I couldn't find the yellow tracksuit. So I'll probably just go as one of the Reservoir Dogs characters.
Yeah, simple enough.
Probably the canine.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Can you imagine the thrill that Tarantino is going to get when he sees a photo of Jim Broadbent
Exactly.
Reservoir Dogs. I mean, that was what was wrong with Reservoir Dogs to begin with, was no Jim Broadbent. You know?
There you have it. That's not Fuzz, by the way. Fuzz actually knows how to deal with her paws and, indeed, Halloween cauldrons, etc. Don't put the paws in the cauldron. Lord's sakes. Fergus, last two questions for Phil Leonis, please, before we go and find out who Robin Pierce is effectively going to put together as the contributor of the week.
Phil, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show this evening?
I'm sorry, I can't really pay attention to the question with the with the cat that Alex is torturing in the background.
I'm getting into my Reservoir Dogs moment. Don't slice the ear off.
You're supposed to put them under before you spay and neuter, Alex. Horrible. Yeah, it's been a fascinating time.
And we'll be joining us again next week.
I will be joining you next month when we are simpatico again in terms of our hourly schedules.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, it'll be November.
Oh, of course, yes.
Remember, as we once said. Phil Linus, we support you.
There's a downtown fair singing out proud Mary as she cruises Christopher Street. And some southern queen is acting loud and mean where the docks and the badlands meet. This Halloween is something to be sure of. Especially to be here without you. There's a Greta Garbo and an Alfred Hitchcock and some black Jamaican stud. There's five Cinderellas and some leather drags. I almost fell into my mug. There's a Crawford Davis and a tacky Cary Grant. And some homeboys looking for trouble down here from the Bronx. But there ain't no Harry and no Virgin Mary. You won't hear those voices again. And Johnny Rio and Rotten Rita, you never see those faces again. This Halloween is something to be sure of. Especially to be here without you. There's the born again losers and the lavender boozers and some crack team from Washington Heights. The boys from Avenue B, the girls from Avenue D are Tinkerbell and tights. This celebration somehow gets me down, especially when I see you're not around. There's no Peter Pedantic saying things romantic in Latin, Greek, or Spic. There's no Three Bananas or Brandon Alexander dishing all their tricks. It's a different feeling that I have today, especially when I know you've gone away. There's a girl from Soho with a t-shirt saying I blow. She's with the Jive 5, 2 plus 3. And the girl for pay dates are giving cut rates or else doing it for free. The past keeps knock, knock, knocking on my door, and I don't want to hear it anymore. No consolations, please, for feeling funky. I gotta get my head above my knees. But it makes me mad and that makes me sad, and then I start to freeze. In the back of my mind I was afraid it might be true. In the back of my mind I was afraid that they meant you. The Halloween parade. At the Halloween parade. At the Halloween parade. See you next year at the Halloween parade.
Lead writer for the world's longest-running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy. Host of Piercing the Veil, regular Stone Tapes and Midweek Drive contributor, and the UK's very own Welsh Caped Crusader. Tis time for Robin Pierce.
I don't know what he's going to say, frankly. I mean, he probably has his own sort of line, his own viewpoint. It may sort of be just mild. Maybe he actually said, yeah, what's a Halloween special without the chainsaws? I don't know. Sorry, Robin, I believe you're actually there. Welcome to the Midweek Drive.
Good evening, Lincoln. How are we?
Well, wow, you know, we're not going to go schizophrenic on this particular routine because, you know, self will say to self. Yeah, what? I have to say, very good material on Battlestar Galactica and Night Gallery in the latest edition of the aforementioned Starburst magazine. Yeah, as you may have gathered this time round, no real challenges getting hold of a copy. So,
there were plenty in the W.H. Smith when I bought one earlier today.
That's not good news. That means that they're not selling.
But, Robin, I'm excited to find out which Simpsons Treehouse of Horror was named the best in the top 10.
It is interesting.
I stopped watching The Simpsons. I stopped watching them after the film came out. I thought, you know.
Yeah, well, even some of the bigger ones of ours have kind of drifted off as the years have gone by.
I saw
a recent episode and I thought, good grief, Bart sounds like an old man, even though he's voiced by a woman.
Yeah.
For a major clue about on page 62, it's the winner. It actually ties in with what Kira earlier in the show said she really wasn't impressed with the remake of.
Yeah.
But we're not here to actually chew the fat about various sort of aspects of the world's longest running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy. We are actually here to hear from Robin Pierce. And Phil, I think it's the first time we've actually been in this slightly new routine where basically we put Robin on at the end of the programme. Mm-hmm. So he's had a chance to actually listen to the full concoction, the way it's developed, the way it's sort of expanded, etc., take it in its own stride and effectively deliver that vital piece of information, who is actually deserving of the official Halloween Robin Pierce award of most valuable contributor of the programme.
Who will be the accomplice?
Just too much, too much. I tell you, too much. Still too much.
But I've only just got here.
I know. This is true. Talk us through your particular summation of the programme, please,
then.
Robin.
Well, strong start, strong start. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Tessa, but today's offering was nowhere near in the league, not even in the ballpark of Ukrainian cowboy. But then, what could possibly be?
You see, Kira, some people like Ukrainian cowboy.
Oh, we do, we do. I lost where I was on my
I know, it's all right. Keep it going. We've got 600 seconds to fill. Keep going.
William Coles. Yeah. Very disappointed in William this week. He found the curse of Leonora terrifying. Really? Really, William? Yeah. I found it boring. I found it telegraphed. I found it obvious. And I found it lazy. If you want to see a really good film this Halloween in the cinema, go watch Countdown, which opened last Friday. It is amazing. I was going to put the anointed one thing on that sound effect you had after William Coles' segment, because I found that rather eerie and found that I had to actually put the lights on, but there we go. Carson Vaughan, Zoo Nebraska, sounds interesting. Dismantling of an American dream. You know, Trump's already done it. But I tell you what, somebody should copyright his phrase that stories are everywhere all the time. That itself is pure poetry and true and inspirational. Gemma Baker, sorry Gemma, I don't do much poetry, but please have a blast with your poetry.
Oh, how shall I view thee sitting there upon a log, oh dear, oh sweet expiring frog? Not my words, the words of Charles Dickens, just thought I'd make that clear.
Okay then. How many of my 600 seconds have I got left?
we're fine.
Yeah, we're doing
fine. Yeah.
Eva McDonald, good advice regarding animals and fireworks. I'm lucky I live rurally out of town, and on firework night, in any event, I tend to play some music a little bit louder so that
Bo isn't frightened. Because Bo's even more frightened when he confuses Eva McDonald with Zoe Jameson.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, sorry. I have got.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. You have exactly.
Yeah.
So many things.
The thing is, Eva McDonald.
She'll have it out with you tomorrow, I can tell you. You know, she'll probably sort of want to know exactly. She might even turn up now. Who knows what could happen with respect to Eva? You know, you might take a fit of pique. You know how these performers are, these entertainers, particularly if they're doing show business things.
You know, I got the show schedule from you, as I normally do, and I saw TBA to be announced there, and I thought, oh, it's Halloween.
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
And what did you give us? You did not disappoint, did you? No. You gave us a family psychologist named Linda Blair on Halloween.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you did.
Yeah, again, I always like to just raise that
fantastic,
bar.
Fantastic. Phil Linnis, engaging and interesting. And yeah, those plague suits. I've seen those in a film somewhere, and I can't remember what it was. Oh, it was that strange one with Oliver Reed about the priest or something. Oh, I remember. Anyway, yes, the anointed one this week. Kira, will you take a bow, please?
Wow. Oh, yes. Thank you.
I will tell you why, okay? You asked a question that I pondered for years.
I ask many questions that people have
the guts
to
ask anyone.
I think I may know which one it is. Just tell
us
which one it is.
I won't take it any further than that, but I thought, I've wanted to know that for years.
Yeah.
I'm glad
Zoe
that...
kind of...
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a Labrador.
Of course it's got to be that one.
A Labrador, not a Shih
Tzu. I've often wondered the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it a purely human thing?
It just baffled me, that's all.
So there we have it. Phil Hamlin Williams, have you enjoyed the production this evening?
Immensely.
Mm-hmm. Was there any final thoughts you'd like to give in terms of why Robin should make sure that when he's on his way back to Wales after 3 days at Sci-Fi Weekender, where we'll be interviewing people like crazy mad baboons in all sorts of ways, and that's just Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah. like gibbons we will be.
Exactly. Funky, obviously. Any sort of little final sort of notes about what's happening at the Lincoln Drill Hall?
I do. This coming week we have the wonderful Lucy Worsley coming to talk about her book on Queen Victoria, and that is ludicrously exciting.
She's been on this show, of course, Miss Lucy.
Oh, wonderful.
Has she really?
To be followed up by...
Several times. Give her my best, she won't remember.
I will. To be followed up by Waiting for Godot, performed by the wonderful Common Ground Theatre.
He may arrive. Again.
Who knows? I've seen a preview, and it is wonderful. It's great stuff.
And, of course, find out other details about the Drill Hall as the things transpire and evolve. Kira, are you joining us tomorrow morning for...
Yes. I will actually roll out of bed this time and make it. I always struggle to do that.
So, and why? What do witches ask for at hotels? This is particularly apt.
Witches ask for at hotels?
Broom service.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there we are. Thank you to Tessa Snart, William Coles, Carson Vaughan, Zoe Jameson, Linda Blair, Phil Leonis, and Robin Pearson. In the studio, of course, Kira Osbrook, winner of the box of chocolate she takes away as contributor of the week. Robin's Halloween official gift there. You can take that box away for... You've got to put it towards your housewarming tomorrow or house party. Wonderful stuff there. Phil Hamilton, as we said, and Fergus Jeffs, and... the listener, exactly. It might be Penny, who knows, but the listener in general. Thank you. Up next, it's another Siren Cinema Halloween Spooktacular show. I don't think it's going to be a patch on just personally. Tomorrow morning, in case you're interested, we will be focusing on a whole range of fine folk. We've got one of the former England international rugby players talking, strangely enough, about the upcoming final. That's Andy Good, former England fly half. Kelly Greiler. We'll be talking about paranormal pet activity. And we also have the author of Amelia Fang and the Lost Yeti Treasures, Laura Ellen Anderson, joining us. In addition to Jenny Finch, Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams and Ian Lennox. Pretty much unmissable, Kira. You're back for that?
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. That's the whole thing. So I think, should we wrap up with Happy Halloween? Would you say that's a...
I'd say that's more for tomorrow, though.
You're quite right.
Happy Devil's Night.
Oh, what the heck? Should we just say Happy Sci-Fi Weekend? Because I've got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Happy Sci-Fi Weekend.